It is Friday, September 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the leaders of the United States and North Korea engage in heated rhetoric regarding Pyongyang's nuclear program.
There's a recognition that the North Koreans are not going to end this program due to threats or due to sanctions.
Germans prepare for national elections this weekend, and a new film portrays the injury and recovery of one of the Boston Marathon bombing survivors. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump called North Korean leader Kim Jong-un a madman after Kim indicated he soon may test a hydrogen bomb over the Pacific Ocean. Kim made the announcement after warning he would match the president's threatening words and new sanctions with equally provocative action. Trump responded to the reclusive North Korean leader Friday by renewing the rhetorical exchange between the two on Twitter. Kim's announcement came in response to Trump's United Nations address this week, when the U.S. leader referred to Kim as a rocket man on a suicide mission, called the government in Pyongyang a depraved regime, and said if forced to defend itself or its allies, the United States will totally destroy North Korea. In a statement directly attributed to the North Korean leader, Kim on Friday said Trump displayed mentally deranged behavior with his threat to destroy a sovereign nation. He called the U.S. president a dotard. Roger Baker is vice president for strategic analysis at Stratfor, an American geopolitical intelligence platform. I asked him whether the heightened rhetoric underscores a serious security situation on the Korean Peninsula.
Well, there really is. When you look at this, again, this is the, you know, there's the long-term issue of North Korea and the question of North Korean stability and is North Korea a threat to the world. And for the longest time, that's mostly been people thinking of it theoretically or expecting eventually maybe a collapse of North Korea. But the last 2 years has seen such a rapid acceleration of their missile and nuclear testing that they're demonstrating a very real capability. And if you watch the North Koreans, they seem to be, at least in message, presenting the idea that they anticipate that they could handle a conflict with the U.S. and therefore maybe making decisions based on that.
Yes, I believe in one of his latest statements, Kim indicated that he may soon test a hydrogen bomb over the Pacific Ocean.
Well, and his statement simply said he would look at potential extreme measures. I think it was his foreign minister in New York for the UN summit who said, well, that might be a nuclear test over the ocean. And this is in back channel elements. The North Koreans have been already raising this potential issue. They basically said, look, we need to demonstrate to the United States that our capability is not theoretical. Part of why they changed their missile testing to having these last two shots go over Japan was to show a real-world test rather than a theoretical test. Instead of a high-altitude lob, they launched it in a way in which it would actually fly during a military confrontation to be able to demonstrate their ability to use proper guidance and their reentry technology. So from their perspective, if the United States doesn't want to believe that they truly have a hydrogen warhead on a nuclear missile, the best way to show that is to test it in a real-world scenario. And secondarily, as they've hinted, they said they test only small devices because of their geography and geology. Well, they could showcase a much larger device if they could lob one into the ocean.
How much is really known about North Korea's weapons and nuclear program?
A lot of it comes simply from guesses or from very educated watching of what they're doing and assessing what they've done, because they're not exactly inviting people in to review the results of each of these tests. So for the nuclear devices, it's what types of radioisotopes can be picked up in the air if they leak. It's how big is the seismic wave, and therefore, theoretically, what would be the yield of a warhead that would lead that type of seismic wave. For their missiles, it's watching in the range of them, and also through intelligence, trying to understand or collect on what are the types of engines they're using, what's the type of fuel they're using. and basically using that to reverse engineer a model of what their capability would be.
During his speech to the United Nations this week, President Trump, he characterized Kim Jong-un as, you know, as rocket man. Looking at all of the, it seems, ongoing insults between these two leaders, is this just making it worse, or is this something that, perhaps Kim has had in mind all along, but this is just sort of heightening the sort of the rhetoric?
Well, I think what it's clearly done is demonstrated that there is no room for negotiation between the two sides. When a U.S. president comes out and does this, it's very hard to reverse and say, okay, let's sit down and have a real dialogue. So I think that the U.S. strategy has moved away from trying to convince the North Koreans to end this program. And there's a recognition that the North Koreans are not going to end this program due to threats or due to sanctions. Instead, it's been a shift to try to convince the Chinese that the cost of Chinese physical intervention in North Korea is lower than the cost of waiting, because now the United States is serious about military action.
Yes, China's role in this is really quite interesting, because it's an ally of North Korea, and yet it has issued statements critical of the North Korean government in recent months.
Well, the North Koreans have issued statements critical of the Chinese just as well. The challenge has been that for the longest time, China has assessed that the risk of a nuclear-armed North Korea is not significantly higher than the current threat dynamic in the region, but that trying to go into North Korea to either overthrow the regime or use extreme economic measures to destabilize the North Korean regime is a higher immediate risk to China, because it could lead to, at minimum, a massive refugee crisis on the Chinese border, which would draw the Chinese resources and attention away from dealing with their own internal economic restructuring, with their own internal problems, and with their other Belt and Road initiatives. And that's if things go good. If they go bad, they have a potential war on their border. Or we have to remember that the North Korean missiles that can reach Japan can certainly reach Beijing.
Roger Baker, Vice President for Strategic Analysis at Stratfor. Time now to look at social media. Well, popular on Twitter today is the hashtag DotardTrump. As we heard North Korean leader Kim Jong-un characterize the U.S. president as a dotard. Now, Merriam-Webster, the dictionary, notes that dotard comes from dotage, a word meaning a state or period of senile decay marked by a decline of mental poise and alertness. Elaine on Twitter tweets, "Dear General Kelly," I think she's referring to General John Kelly, who's President Trump's chief of staff, "please confiscate hashtag dotard Trump's phone before he starts a nuclear war." Steve Redman tweets, hashtag dotard Trump belongs in a home so he can see what his great health care bill will do to people. No state Medicaid head is supporting it. Meanwhile, the Columbia Bugle tweets, never forget that the only reason North Korea even has nukes is due to the Clintons. Hashtag dotard Trump. On a more seasonal note, today is the first day of autumn. Under the hashtag first day of fall, Twitter Moment says, bring on the coats and pumpkin spice lattes. Fall is officially here. Harvard Medical School tweets, welcome to the first day of fall at Harvard Medical School. And Captain Obvious tweets, the first day of fall is the perfect time to turn over a new leaf. And that's a look at social media. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The governor of Puerto Rico says Hurricane Maria has killed at least 13 people. Authorities continue to search for earthquake survivors in Mexico. British Prime Minister Theresa May says Britain will honor its commitments as it exits the EU. And President Trump will campaign in Alabama on behalf of establishment-backed Republican Luther Strange. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. Back in 2011, a Pan-STARR survey detected an object in the asteroid belt displaying comet-like activity. So, along with being designated an asteroid when it was discovered 5 years earlier, scientists also gave it a comet designation. After analyzing a 2016 Hubble Space Telescope image of the object, an international group of scientists now say it is actually a binary asteroid. Two asteroids nearly identical in both mass and size orbiting each other at a distance of 96 kilometers. They also found that the object does have comet-like features, including a bright halo of material or coma and a long tail of dust. The team detected strong signs that water ice on the objects was quickly vaporized due to intense solar heating. That's similar to how the tail of a comet is created. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a new film describes the recovery of one of the survivors of the Boston Marathon bombings. The United Nations estimates some 429,000 Rohingya refugees have fled violence in Myanmar for Bangladesh since August 25th. As the number edges toward a half a million, UN agencies are increasing life-saving assistance to desperate people living in squalid settlements. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The number of daily arrivals has fallen to about 1,000 from a high of 20,000 a day. Nevertheless, that steep decline in refugee numbers has done little to ease overcrowding in the makeshift Rohingya sites near two official camps in southeastern Bangladesh. Authorities have allocated an 800-hectare area to new arrivals. The UN Refugee Agency says it is speeding up the distribution of plastic sheeting so as many people as possible can have some protection from monsoon rain and wind. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahecic says health is a major concern given the inclement weather, overpopulated camps, and lack of essential relief.
There are risks of diseases, so that's why the extension is so crucial to be able to release some of the pressure in the camps and to make sure that the new site is also organized in such a way that the sanitation and clean water can be there.
World Health Organization spokeswoman Fadela Shaib says the Rohingya are at risk of waterborne diseases such as malaria, dengue fever, cholera, and diarrhea.
We have also concerns about the injured. They need to be cared for. The immunization rates among children is very, very low. And when you have a population of children who are malnourished, who are in the open, the risk of measles and other childhood diseases is very high.
Shaib says a team of epidemiologists is being deployed to assess the health risks. She says 2 million water purification tablets and 20,000 cholera kits are being distributed. She says a vaccination campaign against measles and polio, launched nearly 1 week ago, is being extended so all 150,000 targeted children are reached. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Germans go to the polls Sunday in national elections that will decide whether Angela Merkel remains chancellor for a fourth consecutive term. As Henry Ridgewell reports, many wrote off Merkel's chances as Germany struggled to cope with the 2015 migrant crisis, but she has weathered the storm and polls point to a comfortable victory.
In Germany, Chancellor Angela Merkel is known as Mutti or Mummy. Campaign posters laud her as intelligent, level-headed and determined, promising to keep Germany on the road to success. Polls suggest voters approve, says political analyst Julian Gopfart of the London School of Economics.
She always tries to absorb different positions and to go towards a consensus-based approach to politics, and that's very popular in Germany in general, I think. But then also I think what plays a really very big role is the election of Trump, Brexit, instability internationally.
European Union leaders hope a Merkel victory will reinforce the bloc's momentum as it recovers from multiple crises, chief among them the migrant influx. Close to 1 million asylum seekers entered Germany in 2015. Many predicted the end of Merkel's political career, but she has appealed to German society's sense of responsibility.
Ich muss ganz ehrlich sagen, wenn wir jetzt anfangen, uns noch entschuldigen zu müssen dafür.
At a recent campaign rally, she told the crowd, if we must go and apologize for showing a friendly face to those in need, then this is not my country. Merkel has tried to win back voters by promising tougher immigration laws, but the crisis bolstered support for the far-right Alternative for Germany party, or AfD, which also has put security center stage. Following recent terror attacks, the party is on course to gain its first parliamentary seats. Again, Julian Gottfahrt.
Everything above 10% will definitely be a success for them. I mean, you have to remember that they're only 4 years old.
The AfD could become the main opposition, depending on what governing coalition emerges from the election. That, in turn, depends on the success of the centre-left SPD under the former EU Parliament President Martin Schulz, currently polling in second place. Schulz told reporters this week, the people in this country are still listening, and every second German is still undecided who they will vote for. The world is also listening. In its support for the Paris Climate Agreement as a champion of free trade through its strong condemnation of the crackdown in Turkey, Germany's role on the global stage is growing, according to Gottfahrt.
You can read it in German media as well, this kind of talk, but it's not a very big issue in Germany as such. And I think Germans are very reluctant to embrace this role still, I think.
Instead, analysts say most Germans prioritise domestic stability and they will cast their votes accordingly. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. On April 15, 2013, the world watched as two homemade bombs exploded at the finish line of the iconic Boston Marathon. Three people were killed, more than 260 injured, including Jeff Bauman. Both his legs were blown off. Hours later, when he awoke from surgery, Bauman helped the FBI identify Tamerlan Tsarnaev as one of the terrorists. Now the film Stronger, based on Bauman's memoir by the same name, recounts how that terrorist attack changed Bauman's life forever and for the better. Jake Gyllenhaal portrays Bauman. They spoke to VOA's Penelope Pulu about the film and bringing Bauman's personal experience onto the large screen.
I'm going to be there at the finish line for you.
I'm going to make a big sign for you.
Within seconds, Jeff Bauman turns from an enthusiastic spectator waiting to cheer his marathon running girlfriend at the finish line to a frontline terror victim.
There was an explosion and your legs, they're gone, bro.
As soon as he opens his eyes in the hospital, both legs amputated, Jeff Bauman, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, has to relearn how to live in his own body. His close relationship with girlfriend Erin Hurley, played by Tatiana Maslany, and his mother, played by Miranda Richardson, are tested.
You just have to show up for once.
I showed up for you!
Gyllenhaal told VOA this was his most challenging role.
You know, the great irony of this is I've played, you know, people who are professional, you know, athletes and things, and there has been nothing that's come close as difficult physically as this role. You know, understanding the difficulty of just taking a few steps is what we thought, and we've always believed the movie to be about a man who learns how to take a few steps and the extraordinary journey that he goes through to do that.
Gyllenhaal's gritty portrayal informs not only Bauman's battle to stand on his prosthetic legs, but his emotional struggle against post-traumatic stress disorder.
I have, over the years, met many different people in the process of making movies, members of the military, police officers, a number of people who have suffered from PTSD in many different forms. And I always feel like you kind of carry the characters you've played with you into other characters. But in terms of understanding Jeff and what he went through, it's pretty much impossible.
Bauman shared his experience and thoughts with the actor.
It felt like I was like sucker punched. You're just not ready for something like that, right? Especially an IED attack. Since it's personal to me, I kind of really attach myself to stuff that's going on, like in London and Barcelona and Syria and stuff like that. And anywhere, Moscow, happens all over the world every day.
Jeff Bauman personified the slogan, Boston Strong, because his recovery meant the city's recovery.
You can get through something like this, and you can live a positive life after.
When events are as tragic as they are, we tend to focus on the event itself and the people who did the event, and not the people who survive. And I think this movie is about the people who survive, who go on to live, and who go on to live a better life than they ever thought they would, even before. And that's why Jeff inspires me.
It's gonna be all right. Huh? I'm gonna be okay, right? So you're gonna be okay.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Sounds like a very moving film. Well, that is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Gang violence, corruption, and economic desperation have for years been driving thousands of migrants from the Northern Triangle countries of El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras to seek safety and opportunity in other countries, particularly the United States. And over the past several years, many of these migrants have been unaccompanied minor children. Faced with unimaginable violence at the hands of ruthless gang members, debilitating poverty and hopelessness, nearly 70,000 children from El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala embarked upon a treacherous journey in the summer of 2014 with a goal of reaching the United States, wrote former mission director of the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, in El Salvador, Larry Sachs, in a recent article. Yet, a baseline survey in El Salvador, taken after the migration surge, indicated that 70% of citizens in high-crime municipalities would prefer to remain in their communities than migrate. The United States is working in the Northern Triangle via the U.S. Strategy for Engagement in Central America. The United States' whole-of-government strategy integrates initiatives addressing security, economic, and good governance challenges to promote a safe, democratic, and prosperous region where people can build a better life. The strategy complements the Alliance for Prosperity, an initiative launched by the presidents of El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras to enhance security and promote prosperity in the region. So, for example, USAID-sponsored education programs in El Salvador's high-crime communities help keep over 100,000 youth in school and out of gangs, while increasing their chances of landing good jobs. At the same time, USAID-supported criminal justice reforms and judicial transparency are helping to reduce corruption and impunity while increasing citizen trust in the government. where we have integrated our efforts with better policing, improved education, safe parks and playgrounds, and increased job and economic opportunities, crime rates go down. People in these communities feel safer. Their children play in new sports fields and parks, and businesses stay open later, wrote Larry Sachs. Our support for El Salvador and Central America is making a difference that not only helps Central Americans build a better, safer life for themselves in their own countries, but helps ensure our own security and prosperity as well.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.